Life Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Heroes for Healthy Pets. We're passionate about your pet's health.
Yes, you know that intro music always gets me going. I love it. I love it. Hello and good day from California. Welcome to the Dr. Courtney Podcast. As you can probably guess, my name is Dr. Courtney. I'm a veterinarian, former co-host of Pet Talk on Nat Geo Wild, and just all-around pet lover. I want to send a big thank you to all of you who are regular listeners, and for those of you who are tuning in for the very first time, welcome. This is a podcast where we get to laugh, love, and just learn a lot about pets. Well, who likes surprises? Well, today we have a surprise in store for you. We are going to try something that I don't believe has ever been tried before. Honestly, I don't think this has ever been tried, attempted in the history of podcasting. Now, I'm kidding, of course, but seriously, what we're going to do today is new for this show, and I like breaking into new frontiers, so that's exactly what we're going to do today. For the very first time on this show, we are going to be joined by an outstanding global citizen from Nairobi, Kenya. Yes, Kenya, a beautiful country on a diverse continent, replete with people doing outstanding work on behalf of animals everywhere. If you're the type of person that likes to be motivated, energized, and inspired, then this is a podcast you're going to want to listen to. If you're the type of person that has ever wondered, what can I do to help change the world? This is the interview you're going to want to hear. So let's jump right into it. If you want to save an animal, become a veterinarian. If you want to save a species, become an animal conservationist. If you want to save an animal, become a veterinarian. If you want to save a species, become a conservationist. Although that adage sounds very nice, it's a little bit oversimplified and it's not quite accurate. And to prove that today we're going to add another level of complexity to that axiom, because saving animals is complex. And the reason why it's more complex is because of us. It's because of people. Our influence has a huge bearing on the health of individual animals and species writ large. Furthermore, our interaction with animals has a strong bearing on human health as well. So let's for a second consider an example. A family with two kids that lives in Connecticut in the United States, and they recently adopted a beautiful 8-month-old schnoodle puppy. Yes, that's right, a schnauzer mixed with a poodle. And they adopted him right at the height of the spring season. And like any typical family, they're excited about their new puppy, and they spend a lot of time outside. They go for walks. They play fetch outside. They may play a little tug of war in the grass. And about 2 months later, they notice that their new schnoodle is having a little bit of diarrhea. Now, this isn't your typical, I shouldn't have had sriracha last night type of diarrhea. This is bad. Not to get too gross, but the eliminations are soft, pale, stinky, and there's a lot of mucus. And even after about 48 hours of this, the pet parents start to see blood in the diarrhea. Now, the fact that the diarrhea has tinges of blood is concerning. They bring their schnoodle to the regular vet only to get the news that their schnoodle has been diagnosed with Giardia. What is Giardia? Well, think of it like an entire animal contained within a single cell. They're called protozoa, and they like to attack the intestines, which eventually causes diarrhea, bad diarrhea. So now the family is concerned about their dog, and they should be, because this can make dogs very sick. But they're also concerned about other dogs in the neighborhood, because this puppy was basically the neighborhood socialite. And finally, they're concerned about their children and themselves, because that's right, Giardia can cause diarrhea in people too. And there, right there, is an example of the human-animal bond when it comes to infectious disease. And there are more than three interactions. There's the dog, the dog and other dogs, and then, of course, dogs and humans. And so instead of Giardia, we're going to talk about a different disease today, one that is more aggressive, more brutal, and more vicious than Giardia. Essentially, this disease makes Giardia look like a blip on the health radar. Today, we are going to be talking about rabies. Rabies is a horrific example of the intersectionality between the human-animal bond. This virus can affect one dog, other dogs, and of course, humans. Another aspect about this that is even more intriguing is that there's efforts to eradicate rabies are being done on an international scale. As a veterinarian, you are deeply invested emotionally in helping animals and the needs of people in the community. But when you have the chance to speak with somebody who is doing amazing work for the global community, you have to jump at that chance. Just as a little intro to rabies, we know it's a savage virus that causes a quick and horrible death. It has 100% fatality, and the virus spreads through the body or the animal's body in three distinct phases, including a lead-up, which we call a prodromal phase. There's an excitement phase, and that excitement phase, that classical picture of aggression. And then the third phase, which is the dumb or paralytic phase. Veterinarians have up to a 300 times greater risk of coming into contact with rabies. But let's be honest, most people don't think about dying of rabies when they get up in the morning. We're more focused on where to get our morning cup of coffee. But that is not the case in so many other parts of the world. Rabies is preventable, yet it kills nearly 60,000 people worldwide every year. Half of them are children. According to experts, rabies is the deadliest infectious disease known to man, with a case fatality rate of 100%. Most importantly, though, rabies is preventable, and prevention is always better than cure. Vaccination is key, but listening to our next guest may be just as important. He's doing brilliant work in the rabies prevention effort. But before we get to talk to him, let's just get one thing out of the way. I want to be sure to let everyone out there know how they can get in contact with me. If you have any questions, thoughts, or topic discussions, you can reach me at Dr. Courtney DVM on Twitter and Instagram. That's at Dr. Courtney DVM. Questions with positivity and love will get answered with priority, but not exclusivity. So we'll answer anything. But right now, let's just pause for a few brief moments, and then let's reconnect on the flip side so we can break into a new frontier here on the Dr. Courtney Show.
Rabies is the world's deadliest disease and results in the death of a child every 10 minutes. Over 99% of all human cases are caused through dog bites, and the virus can be eliminated through mass canine vaccination programs. Mission Rabies is a charity powered by passion and driven by results. We go to global rabies hotspots and we vaccinate dogs. To date, we've vaccinated over 1 million dogs and we've rabies educated over 2 million children. But it's not enough. We need to do more to beat this disease and we need your help to do it. Please donate, support, and volunteer at www.missionrabies.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back, and I'm super excited to speak with our next guest. If you care at all about animals, if you care at all about people, you'll want to listen to this next doctor. We are going to be speaking with Dr. Thumbi Mwangi. He's a doctor of multiple talents. Dr. Thumbi is a Kenyan veterinarian who achieved his PhD in epidemiology in 2012 from the University of Edinburgh in the UK. His PhD focused on the survival and growth of infectious disease and their co-infections in the host. Since 2013, he's held a faculty position at the Paul G. Allen School for Global Animal Health in Washington State, primarily working in Kenya, leading linked human and animal health surveillance studies. He investigates the link between animal health and human health by looking at which diseases spread from humans to animals and how those socioeconomics and nutrition leads to the spread of these horrible diseases. Dr. Thumbi is spearheading the path towards rabies elimination in Kenya. And we don't even have time to get to all of Dr. Thumbi's credentials. They're just amazing. Amazing. And so podcast family, please join me directly from Kenya in welcoming Dr. Thumbi to the show. Welcome, Dr. Thumbi.
Thank you very much, Dr. Courtney.
Well, we are excited to have you with us today, and we are so appreciative for your generosity of time. We're actually 8 hours ahead of you, and so we want to be super considerate, but we know that you have amazing information and an excellent message to share with our podcast family. But before we get to digging into the details, we do something in the show called Set the Scene. And setting the scene is just basically describing where you grew up, what life was like for you, and your first interactions, your first relationship with animals. Would you mind setting the scene for us, for Dr. Thumbi? Would you mind doing that for us? What was it like for you growing up?
So I grew up in central parts of Kenya, which is in East Africa, and I grew up facing big hills and big mountains. In a small farm, my parents were farmers, and they kept all kinds of animals. They had cattle, they had sheep, they had goats, and they had dogs, and they had chicken, and all of them interacted all in a small farm. And I grew up tending to those animals and also going to school in the villages right there before I went over to the university for my studies as a veterinarian.
So animals were just part of your upbringing. They're part of your childhood.
Yes, and not just mine. Many people living in rural Africa actually continuously are interacting with animals. We do not keep hundreds of animals. We keep just a couple of animals, goats and sheep and cows and chicken, and all of them are all within like a 5-acre piece of land. And so every morning you wake up to the noise of chicken as chicken are crawling, and in the evening you're coming back, cows coming back home. So it's all really exciting living with animals as you grew up.
For sure. And I think that one of the unique aspects about that, and what I think is great to celebrate, is that for a lot of families in the U.S., getting a dog or riding their horse is a unique experience. And it's something they have to think about before they jump right into it. And what's important to remember is in other parts of the world, animals are there when you wake up and when you go to bed. And it's just a unique part. It's integrated into your daily life. Part of daily life, I was wanted to ask you, is that the majority of pet parents in the U.S. get up every day, and they don't think too much about rabies. But as we talked about, that's definitely a different story in other parts of the world. How many people are affected by rabies worldwide, and specifically in Kenya?
Thank you. For every year, we lose about 60,000 people to rabies. Many of these cases, over 99% of them, happen in Africa, India, and other parts of Asia. And mainly it's in children that are below 16 years. So more than half of all cases of people dying from rabies are in children below 16 years. And when we calculate it, actually it's about every 9 minutes a child dies. So
when you're speaking every 9 minutes.
In the next 30 minutes, actually, we'll say 3 people have died from rabies somewhere in the world.
That's really sad. Every 9 minutes, somebody dies from rabies. So just in our conversation alone, there may be 3 people that pass away from rabies. And so, of course, the goal to eliminate this horrible disease is you are at the forefront of this. What are your goals for Kenya when it comes to rabies prevention? And what role do you think vaccination plays?
So in Kenya, we estimate every year we lose about 2,000 people from rabies. And we have looked through and found out that, you know, we have an excellent vaccine that has been there over 100 years, a vaccine that works in animals and a vaccine that works in people in case you're bitten. Unfortunately, this does not appear to be utilized very well in many countries, inclusive of Kenya. So as a veterinarian, I deal with many diseases, but one of the diseases I'm focusing on at the moment is rabies. And the goal really is to make sure that by 2030, there's not a single person dying from rabies in this country and in the entire world as a focused effort by many organizations.
The goal is by 2030 to not have anybody die from rabies.
Zero human deaths from rabies by 2030. It is a goal that we have as a country. We have a strategic plan for it. We are implementing it. And now the World Health Organization, the World Organization for Animal Health, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and other bodies, international bodies, are aligning towards this goal to make sure that there's not a single human who dies this horrible death from rabies, because it is all preventable.
Oh, that's so good to hear. That's so good to hear. And I mean, I know for a lot of people listening, 2030 sounds very far away, but it actually isn't. And it's almost right around the corner. So it's actually beautiful to hear that goal is so close. And do you feel, just from the work you've been doing and the interactions you've had and the knowledge you have, do you feel like 2030 is a reasonable goal, an optimistic goal, a realistic goal?
So it's really realistic because I think on our side, science is on our side. We have got a really good vaccine that works, and that's why you don't have rabies in domestic dogs in the US, because you're vaccinating dogs. We have a vaccine that works in humans. That means if you're bitten and you get the vaccine, what we refer to as post-exposure prophylaxis, within the day of the bite, the likelihood of getting rabies really is reduced. And on top of that, we know that most of the dogs in Africa can actually be accessed through vaccination. You can get hold of them and do parental vaccination, inject them with a vaccine, which makes it pretty easy then, if we have concerted efforts towards rabies elimination, to make it possible that the disease is no longer circulating in the dogs. And if you stop it in the dogs, then you stop it in humans as well. Because unlike other places like the US, where you have now rabies in wildlife, in Africa, the reservoir for the rabies virus, or the animal that where the virus circulates, is actually a domestic dog. So our focus is on domestic dog, because if you vaccinate a domestic dog, then you stop the diseases in human.
Absolutely. Now, when we think about domestic dogs, from many people in the U.S., their perspective is they schedule an appointment with their veterinarian for vaccines, and they get prepped for that appointment. They have other things on their list throughout the day, maybe seeing friends or acquaintances, and then they go to the vet's office. Their dog gets a vaccine, and then they go on with the rest of the errands throughout their day. Now, that may be the case in some parts of Africa, but the effort that I hear about and I read about are massive vaccination programs. So when you compare and contrast what I just described as far as setting up an appointment with your dog to go to the vet and receive a rabies vaccination, how logistically, how are these massive vaccination programs carried out? And do you sometimes have to track down feral dogs, or are most of these dogs, as you mentioned, domesticated and they just come right in?
So when you vaccinate dogs, if you are within urban centers within many cities in Africa, people that own dogs will be able to take their dogs to the veterinarian just like you do in the US. But a majority of the dogs are in the rural areas, and there we don't have a vet clinic that is within reach for many of them. Secondly, it is not in their usual practice to take their dogs to the veterinarian. So what we do, actually, logistically, what you need to do is go into a village and make them aware that you're going to be delivering veterinary services close to them on a certain day. And you do that by having like loudspeakers on a vehicle, and you're moving around villages and informing them that the next week on Wednesday, we'll be coming and we'll set up a clinic under a tree or the nearest school or somewhere near the shopping center, the village shopping center. And the idea is for them to, on that day, make the dogs that they own. Many of them are not even confined, but they have ability to access them and take them over to where the vaccination clinic will be, that they bring them together in masses, and you sort of have a high vaccination of dogs within a small area, and you can keep moving into different places as you have makeshift veterinary clinics that people can bring their dogs to for vaccination.
Ah, excellent. So you give them advance warning that you're coming, and do you find that they're well attended? Do you find that they're very receptive to these makeshift, as you say, vaccination clinics?
They are, provided you give information, and many people now are becoming aware through our efforts about the importance of making sure that their dogs are vaccinated. So they will bring their dogs in numbers. Actually, when we vaccinate up to 3,000 dogs in a day. In 10 days, we have 30,000 dogs vaccinated in a small area. So it's really exciting. It's sort of like an industry of dogs coming, and you're just making sure that they are all protected against this deadly disease, rabies.
3,000 dogs vaccinated in one day.
Yes.
Incredible. Incredible. And as you mentioned, this vaccine is very effective. And so when people are listening, they say 3,000 dogs in one day, a very effective vaccine. So I don't get it. Why do we continue to have people dying of rabies? What do you feel are the three reasons, or maybe there's more, but are there specific reasons in your mind as to why, despite having an excellent vaccine, despite getting the word out, that we continue to have people dying from rabies?
Excellent question. So in the absence of concerted efforts like what you're doing now in parts of Kenya to bring down the cases of rabies, as I mentioned before, people will not ordinarily take their dogs for vaccination or even for veterinary checkup. So if you go into a new area where you haven't worked before, you have less than 5% of the dogs vaccinated against rabies. And what that means is that those dogs, in case the rabies virus is circulating in the area, they will become wild and will bite people, and you have a lot of people and children dying from rabies. The reason for that is that often there is very low priority given to rabies disease, both in the human side and the animal side, because of many other competing tropical infectious diseases that people and their animals experience. So if you have a perception that it is a small public health problem, then it becomes difficult to invest resources in that. But that's something you're overcoming now by letting people know that rabies is real, rabies is killing them. Every 9 minutes, a child is dying. Let's vaccinate our dogs. Let's eliminate rabies because it is possible. The second main reason why sometimes there's not much effort put towards rabies elimination is because there's a misconception that stray dogs are really important in the spread of rabies. And that's sort of interesting because if you travel through many villages in many parts of Africa, you see dogs that are freely roaming without an owner, or you can't see somebody walking with it. Whereas that is a situation, the actual thing is that if you wanted that dog to come to the vaccination center, all you need to do is make an announcement and the owner of that dog will make sure that the dog comes to the vaccination center. And we find scientifically that those dogs that are free roaming are not even as important in terms of spreading rabies as opposed to the ones that you'd consider as a stray. And maybe in India and other places you have more of stray dogs, but in most of Africa, all dogs are owned. At least 99% of the dogs are owned, and if you want to vaccinate it, you vaccinate them, you'll actually get a chance. The third reason is there has been a misconception that wildlife plays an important role in the spread of rabies in Africa. All the studies that you've done, and some excellent studies that have been done even in Tanzania, next to Serengeti National Park, show that if you vaccinate domestic dogs against rabies, even wild animals like wild dogs, they will not get rabies because the reservoir for the rabies virus is actually a domestic dog. And so when you think of it, that rabies is an important public health problem, we need not to get too worried about stray dogs and need not get too worried about rabies in wildlife. It becomes possible to make sure that there's zero human death due to rabies by 2030.
Wow, this is a serious issue because a lot of people naturally think about wildlife. And I think that perception may have be pervasive in the United States. People think about rabies as a disease that occurs in wolves or coyotes or raccoons and skunks. They don't necessarily think about it in terms of the wall being the domestic dog. And you're saying in Africa, these dogs are our own. And so if you can vaccinate domestic dogs, you could potentially create a wall against the spread of rabies.
You're correct.
Yes. I guess my question is, then how much of the population needs to be vaccinated and how deadly is rabies? Because most people say, we know that rabies is deadly and we know that it's highly infectious, but how much of the population actually needs to be vaccinated in order to prevent this?
That's an excellent question. So the way we determine what proportion of the population needs to be vaccinated against any disease for the disease to be stopped is using something we call a reproductive ratio. So if you imagine of it that if you have an infectious dog come into a population, how many other dogs will be infected by that dog? And you have calculated that across many settings where you have highly dense numbers of dogs and where they are a bit scarce. And the figure is about every infectious dog introduced into a naive population will infect about 1.4 dogs. Now, you can use that number to determine what proportion is required to vaccinate for you to stop the disease within the population. And what you find for rabies is actually 70%. When you calculate, it's actually smaller than 70%, but we have a very high turnover of dogs within the population here. On average, a dog will live about 2.5 years, which is sort of would be surprising for many pet owners like in the United States. But here, a dog, on average, you live about 2.5 to 3 years. And so,
sorry to interrupt you, Dr. Thumbi. Dogs, you're saying particularly where you are in Kenya, their average lifespan is about 2.5 years.
Exactly. And the reason for that is there's this high mortality of young dogs and puppies that is as a result of infectious diseases and other causes. So if you're in a population and you vaccinate dogs, if you come back 3 years down the line, a big proportion, majority of the dogs will actually be new dogs. They'll be naive dogs. So when you account for that high dog turnover, the population that you need to vaccinate annually to make sure that the disease is stopped, rabies is stopped, is 70%, which is interesting because 70% is actually quite easy to reach. It's unlike when you try to vaccinate against a disease that requires 99%, then you almost need to reach every person or every animal for that. But for rabies, if you can vaccinate 70% of the dogs in an area, you have broken the transmission cycle of the virus and the disease will come to an end.
Wow, that's the key number, folks. The podcast family, everybody focus on that number, 70%. That's the amount, that's the percentage of dogs that need to be vaccinated in order to create this firewall against the transmission and the spread of rabies. Now, because you have studied this so extensively and you're so knowledgeable in regards to this field, are there distinct pathways that you have identified that have helped the transmission of rabies or has continued the transmission of rabies? And if you have identified pathways, what would you say those pathways are?
So the main reason why rabies continues to kill dogs and to kill humans is because they are not vaccinated. We don't stop them. That's the zoonotic pathway. It's the main reason, and it's also the help or the idea that we have to use as a nation and as a continent and as a world to stop rabies from spreading into people and between dogs. What we see is if you vaccinate the dog, and secondly, in case before the disease is eliminated, you provide what we refer to as post-exposure vaccine. That means if you are bitten, you can get your vaccination immediately on the day zero and come back 3 days later, come back 7 days later, come back 14 days later, and come back 28 days later. 5 doses. You are protected from the risk of getting rabies.
5 doses you need. If you're bitten by a dog who you suspect has rabies, you need 5 doses of vaccine after you're bitten.
Yes. Wow. All taken within the first month of the bite. One of the things that we see is for many people that live with this in areas where the disease is endemic, the vaccine is not cheap. On average, every dose costs about $15. Now, $15 might sound like it's not a lot of money for many people living in areas like the United States, but in rural villages, $15 could actually mean food for half the month or even a whole month for some families. So some people live with the risk of having been bitten by a dog and they would not access the post-exposure vaccine because they cannot afford it. It is much more cost-effective to make sure that we can stop rabies virus within the dog population, because whereas vaccination in humans will cost $15 per dose, that's about $100 by the time you're done with the 5 doses, in dogs, it costs only $0.5 to vaccinate a dog. It actually is cheaper for us to prevent the disease in the dogs and consequently prevent it in the humans.
Just $0.5. Basically 50 cents.
Yes. And I'm saying that based on the fact that we are vaccinating many dogs at a go. Now, if you go to an individual, as an individual to a veterinarian, there are a lot more costs that are associated with that. But if you are having 3,000 dogs that come to you, you got the vaccine, on average, it costs within Africa, it will cost us about 0.5 for the vaccine. And the delivery of that, we end up spending just about $2 per dog. And that is completely different from the amount of money that you need to prevent the disease in humans if you let the disease continue to transmit among the dog population.
Incredible. Do you feel part of the unique nature of having an opportunity to talk to you is understanding that there's different cultural influences and understanding just the logistics and how people live and go forward and their interaction with pets? Are there any other pathways in regards to the socioeconomics you mentioned as far as the cost of it, but as far as nutrition, do you feel like in terms of nutrition and people's interaction with pets that has any influence on rabies transmission?
Well, there's not. I mean, rabies virus is quite versatile. If you're bitten, it takes every day to travel about 9 centimeters through your nervous system until it gets to the brain, where it gets to the saliva, and at that point you have full-blown disease. Now, we know that, for instance, malnutrition in children is responsible for over 50% of the likelihood of getting infectious diseases. This may have some influence also for rabies, but the rabies virus is so deadly that even if you are in the best of the nutritional plane, if you are bitten by a dog and you've got the virus deposited by that bite, it's unlikely that you survive without intervention, which would include post-exposure prophylaxis vaccines.
Okay. So the question becomes now, we understand that zoonotic pathway spreading to humans is a pathway. We understand malnutrition. We understand some of the socioeconomic aspects of it. But once we identify the pathways, I like to call it know your enemy. Know what you're dealing with. Know what the enemy is. The question becomes the fight. And you've been absolutely a really stalwart soldier in that fight. What is the official name of the organization you work with? And are there other foundations that are helping you with this effort?
So we work here with the Washington State University, a school called the Paul G. Allen School for Global Animal Health. It is spearheading work towards research that we can do to improve the efficiency of the elimination campaigns that you're running here in Kenya, in Tanzania, and are contributing globally with other nations. And if you wanted to get in touch, you could go to the Washington State University Eliminate Rabies Program, and there will be a lot of information on that. That's what we do within the university. We work as well with many partners within countries. So, for instance, in Kenya, we work with a unit in government called the Zoonotic Disease Unit, which is a special unit within the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Livestock that ensures that diseases that jump from animals to man, the zoonotic diseases, have special attention. Because without that, there will be many other infectious diseases that the ministries might concentrate on. So special attention is given by making sure we have a department like the Zoonotic Disease Unit. And we have other partners such as the World Health Organization that are giving the big guidance to countries on what we can do to make sure that rabies is eliminated by 2030. It is a goal that is connected to the Sustainable Development Goals, which in a way, if you'd like, Dr. Courtney, it's the idea is to leave no one behind. So yeah, if you're developing a world, leave no one behind. Because rabies is one of those diseases that is associated with lack. You don't have money, you can't access post-exposure prophylaxis. It's associated with a bit of poverty. To make sure that we do not leave anyone behind, we must make sure that we provide the vaccines to vaccinate the dogs and also provide the vaccines to make sure that people do not get rabies once they're bitten.
Obviously, for me, it's what I love about the effort is it's a team effort. You have major organizations all working on behalf of achieving this goal. And so when you think about something as ambitious as by 2030, not having a single person die from rabies, you think, wow, that's a pretty ambitious goal. How is that even achievable? And now I hear that there's three major organizations, if not more, all really digging in to try to fight this horrible disease. It's really heartening and it's very encouraging to hear that. I definitely want to talk a little bit about that team effort and how we as individuals can help with that team effort. Would you mind staying with us and joining us after a brief break from one of our sponsors?
Right.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. We're going to have a brief word from one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll be joined again by Dr. Thumi.
It's not just a sneeze. It could be the pathway to disease. Your dog is at risk for contracting dog flu. That's why it's important to vaccinate your dog for dog flu. Get your dog vaccinated today. Visit dogflu.com for more information.
Oh sure, it's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right, we're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are back. We are having an amazing conversation and just scintillating details about what is happening on the world stage in terms of rabies elimination. We're speaking with, and like I mentioned before, an outstanding global citizen who is doing incredible work on behalf of rabies elimination internationally, specifically in Nairobi, Kenya. We're so pleased to be joined by Dr. Thumbi directly from Kenya, and he's given us a lot of pearls of wisdom, including just the pathways of why rabies is spread, how the challenges that are ahead of us in terms of fighting this disease, and how education and vaccination are absolute keys in preventing this disease from ravaging communities. One thing we mentioned right before the break is that we have major organizations that are invested in this effort, particularly Washington State University, the Zoonotic Disease Unit in Kenya, and of course the World Health Organization. But there are people who are listening right now who are thinking, man, this is an incredible effort. I want to help. How can I help? How can the podcast family listening right now, is there any ways that they can help this effort to achieve the goal that you had set out by 2030 to prevent any humans from dying from rabies?
That's an excellent question. So I think there are two main ways in which they may be able to help. One of them is to talk directly to Washington State University, because they have a special Eliminate Rabies project that is looking towards getting the science and the vaccines that can be brought to areas where the disease is endemic. So that is one avenue. They looked up Washington State Eliminate Rabies project. The second one is something that the University of Washington State has been working with many veterinarians that have vet clinics across the U.S., and the idea is that pet owners that take their dogs to the veterinarians have a chance that once their dog is vaccinated against rabies, they can donate a part of like a dollar, or the vet clinic will donate a dollar towards that cost. And that money is all consolidated to make sure that rabies is eliminated in the world. So there are a number of fantastic veterinary clinics that are participating in this program. And I think as a pet owner, maybe worth asking your vet whether they have heard of the program and if they are willing to join it, because I think that would be an absolute good pathway to make sure that there's impact from our pet owners.
So there's a portion of the cost of the vaccine that they can actually donate to that effort. And it sounds like from what you talked about before, some of the socioeconomic efforts, it sounds like a little bit can go a long way. Would you say that that's pretty accurate?
That's pretty accurate.
Okay, excellent. You know, I think about this mission and I think about how much you've dedicated your life to this mission. What would you say are your favorite parts about this mission and the things that you've enjoyed the most about being on the front lines of rabies prevention?
I think that the fantastic thing about being engaged in these mass dog vaccination campaigns is the beauty that you see as young boys and girls come with their dogs and the bond that they have between them. It's just amazing to watch. Almost 90% of all the dogs that come for vaccination are actually accompanied by a child. It's not even adults that bring in these dogs. And it's amazing to know that once you vaccinate this dog, you're actually protecting the dog's friend, who is a child that comes with it. And just seeing all this thing happening, and you having 3,000 dogs vaccinated in an area continuously for 10 days, you have 30,000 dogs vaccinated in a small area, and you know that you have stopped the disease in that area and you're making impact. I think that for me is comforting.
That is really comforting. And not to obviously take a turn for the worst, but not to take a negative turn here, but I just want to be realistic. I want people to really understand just how important and how serious this fight is. And so I have to ask you, what have been the most challenging or frustrating aspects about this fight, and things that you aren't exactly your most favorite about the effort to fight rabies?
So I think the most disturbing times are when I know you're beginning and you're working in an area, but once in a while we get that there's a child that has had a bite and that they never got the vaccine, and the dog that bit them was a suspect rabid case, and then they end up with a clinical manifestation of the disease, at which point I know there's absolutely nothing you can do. Like you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, rabies is 100% fatal. If you start showing the clinical signs, there is no treatment for it. So at that point, there's a frustration that there's nothing you can do. And the opportunity to have done something was actually a couple of weeks before. That, I think, to me, is one of the most distressing times working as a veterinarian in this side. And the other thing is, sometimes, you know, governments have different priorities. And when you have people in government that don't seem to recognize that they have power to make sure that the citizen is protected from rabies, I think those are sort of frustrating times. But ideally, as I see it, the more we talk about it, the more we start showing results as we are doing now. There's sort of a rallying around these costs, not just by government, but also by individuals that own the dogs. And that really converts again into a beautiful picture, knowing that we have a chance of eliminating rabies. We have done that before, Dr. Courtney. We have done that with smallpox. We have done that with rinderpest. And I think we have a chance to do it with rabies.
I agree with you. I think that when I see the power of vaccines, when I hear about the historical benefits of how we've completely eradicated some of the most pernicious diseases, it is very heartening and it is encouraging. As an organization, obviously, it's amazing people like you, Dr. Thumbi, and many, many others. What do you feel to be the biggest benefit of your team, and what are you most proud of about your organization and the team that you work with?
I think my pride comes from knowing that you're having real impact in the real world. You know, as a vet, as I mentioned, we help and make sure that animals are in the best condition and they're living a good life. And also that people that own the animals, the people that are friends with the animals, are also happy about them. Some of the things that we do, there's no good ending. But for rabies, I feel in the lifetime, my lifetime as a veterinarian, I have a chance to see us conquer a disease that has a horrific way of ending a life and a horrific way of ending a dog's life. And I think that to me is really a big motivation of being a vet, being able to make real impact in the real world.
Real impact in the real world. And like you said, in your lifetime, I firmly believe in the cause and I feel optimistic about the cause. And like you said, in your lifetime, hopefully you'll see that goal achieved. And that has to be absolutely an incredible feeling. Of course, on the front lines here in the States, my goal is each individual pet and making sure that I improve their lives. And it's a microdose of satisfaction and happiness where I see each pet as they come through the door, live a happier, healthier life. But when you put it on such a massive scale, like rabies elimination, that has to be one of the most gratifying aspects of what you do. Do you have to travel throughout the continent of Africa? Or are you really centered and focused in Nairobi, Kenya?
So I travel around most of the country in Kenya, seeing these programs and helping individual veterinarians working on rabies elimination. And also get a chance to travel to Tanzania, get a chance to travel to South Africa, and a couple of other places as this program is growing. The goal of elimination is only about 2 years old now, Dr. Courtney.
Okay.
And I think we're sort of getting the fire. And to some extent, I feel like we are sort of going in the right energies, and you look forward to more countries in Africa, in Asia, taking up this goal and making sure that no human death due to rabies happens by 2030.
You speak all over the world and you write, you're a faculty member. Where can people learn more about this effort? If somebody says, wow, you know, I love listening to Dr. Thumbi, I need to learn more, what resource would you direct them to?
If you wanted to learn about the programs that the Washington State University is doing, and I'm representing them in East Africa, you could go to Paul G. Allen School for Global Animal Health Eliminate Rabies Program, and that will show up. There are other fantastic resources as well on rabies. Like in Kenya, we have a website called Rabies Free Kenya, which documents part of the things, rabiesfreekenya.com, which documents part of the activities that you're doing and has excellent, beautiful pictures of people working in the field and the dogs that you're vaccinating. And there are other resources as well. There's an organization that you're already around called the Global Alliance for Rabies Control, the World Health Organization. And I think there are a lot of people that are interested, a lot of organizations that are playing a major role to making this goal possible.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we got to check out all those resources because I feel like you and I have literally just scratched the surface of all of the different unique nuances about this rabies elimination goal and the fight against rabies transmission. But we've got limited time, but we will have to do, we'll have to do a part two and a part three. Would you mind if we did a part two and a part three, would you mind joining me again?
I would love to join you again and to have your listeners as well listen to our conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you again, Dr. Thumbi. We absolutely enjoyed our conversation, and I can't wait to have another one. Take care, and I'm going to wish you the best of luck in the rabies elimination fight.
Many thanks, and best of luck to you.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, folks. Wow, that was incredible. Directly from Kenya, we had Dr. Thumbi, who's, I mean, the knowledge base that he has in terms of this topic is so expansive, and he had so many in-depth details about logistically, how do you fight rabies? How do you continue the fight to eliminate this globally? We identified different pathways, whether it be nutritional pathways, socioeconomic pathways, and of course, zoonotic pathways, where the domestic dog is directly in contact with people. And more importantly, in Africa, the majority of dogs are owned. And so we do have to avoid the misconceptions that we had a chance to talk about, specifically the fact that, you know, it's a small public health problem. It's not. It's over 60,000 people a year die, over 2,000 people a year die in Kenya alone. So just in our 30-minute conversation, 9 people have died from rabies. Stray dogs being really important, that's a misconception. And because the majority of dogs are owned. And so I think that identifying those misconceptions is really, really important. And then, of course, you know, understanding that the misconception that wildlife plays an important factor, and it doesn't. It's not as strong a factor, particularly in Africa, India, and Asia, where this disease is spreading. So if we want to know more, if we want to learn more about how to join the fight in achieving the goal in 2030, that's the goal Dr. Thumbi articulated. 2030, not having a single person die from rabies. And I'm super excited because that means in our lifetime, we'll be able to see that. Check out Washington State University. Check out World Health Organization. And of course, you know, looking into Rabies Free Kenya, Paul G. Allen Global School for Animal Health. Direct yourself to all these resources so that you can learn more about how to help the fight. And of course, donations. They're always open for donations as well. So it's been an absolutely incredible conversation. We've broken a new frontiers today on the Dr. Courtney Show. And just join me for more amazing episodes with really incredible guests. And in the meantime, just remember, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.